All right, Wrestling with Theology fans, this is Pastor Doug Minton, standing in the confessional corner with you as we do our monthly confessional corner. But before we get into our extremely in-depth focus on the Lutheran Reformation and what is happening around Germany, I'm going to spend a couple of months looking at the rest of the world and the Reformation that is going on there. So this week we get close by as we take into account Switzerland and the Netherlands and the Swiss and Dutch Reformations, which gives us three sections for this episode. First, we're going to Zurich, where in 1519, Ulrich Zwingli became the Leutpriester, the people's priest of Grossmünster in Zurich. In 1522, he began the Reformation in Zurich by attacking the custom of fasting during Lent. As his Reformation continued, he pointed out the corruption in the hierarchy of the Roman Church. He also preached for clerical marriage and against using images in churches. In 1525, he introduced a new communion liturgy to replace the Roman Mass. So he's doing this for 3 years before he finally gets around to having a Mass or a communion liturgy of his own that he would definitely not call the Mass. But he was one of those who really did not like anything Roman Catholic. So we have getting rid of fasting during Lent. We have getting rid of all the images. So you have Zwinglian churches in Zurich and the surrounding area that have very plain interiors. Nothing wrong with plain interiors, but even some of the plain interiors, you know, the occasional banner or image is very nice and is able to complement what is going on in that place as we contemplate the great mysteries of the faith. But Zwingli didn't think so, just like Karlstadt. But Zwingli sought to bring all of Switzerland into alliance under his Reformation. However, the five states allied against him. These cantons, Lucerne, Uri, Schwyz, Unterlachen, and Zug desired to remain Catholic. The five states then allied with Archduke Ferdinand of Austria on April 22, 1529. Shortly after, Jacob Kaiser, a Reformed preacher, was executed in Schwyz. This prompted Zwingli to declare war on the five states on June 8, 1529. However, an armistice was reached after Austria refused to help their allies. Now, Zwingli and Luther only met once, and that was at the Marburg Colloquy on October 1st through 4th in 1529. This meeting caused the publishing of 15 Marburg articles. Everyone involved in the colloquy agreed on 14 of the 15 articles. The 15th article involved the real presence of Jesus' body and blood in the Lord's Supper. Zwingli saw any idea of a real presence of Christ in the Lord's Supper as promoting cannibalism. And cannibalism is not a Christian virtue. So he was very adamant about a spiritual presence, not a real presence. A couple of years later, the five states declared war on Zurich on October 9th, 1531. Because Zwingli continued sending Reformed preachers into the five states. The battle on October 11th lasted less than 1 hour. There were 500 casualties for Zurich. Zwingli was one of them. Zwingli had always considered himself a soldier of Christ, a defender of his country, and then a leader of Zurich in that particular order. However, when he died for Zurich, and not for Christ or his confederation of cantons. So we have a very short-lived Zwinglian Reformation in Zurich. We move over 5 years after Zwingli's death, and John Calvin makes a splash onto the scene of the Reformation in Geneva. In March of 1536, Calvin published the first edition of his monumental Institutes of the Christian Religion. He designed it as an elementary instruction book for the Christian faith. However, it also functions as a basis for his constitution for the theocracy of Geneva. There are dozens of references to St. Augustine's City of God throughout the work. And as we get back into the Book of Concord next year, we will have many times where we go to Calvin's Institutes or Augustine's City of God to help understand why Melanchthon or Luther or even the Concordist, when we get to the Formula of Concord again, are saying the things that they are saying. Now on February 26th, 1536, backing up a month, or a few days at least, Heinrich Bullinger published the first Helvetic Confession in Basel. The Zurich representatives objected to the Latin original of it because it sounded too Lutheran. However, the German translation was accepted by everyone. Now, how the Latin translation sounds more Lutheran than the German translation, I don't know. But their 28 chapters in the Helvetic Confession are similar to the Augsburg Confession. On November 20th, 1541, the Council of Geneva passed the Ordinances Ecclesiasticus to define four orders of ministerial function: pastors to preach and to administer the sacraments, doctors to instruct believers in the faith, elders to provide church discipline, and deacons to care for the poor and needy. They also called for the creation of the consistory, which would judge ecclesiastical matters that had no civil jurisdiction. In 1549, Calvin and Bullinger co-drafted the Consensus Trigorinus as an agreement between Calvinists and Zwinglians on the Lord's Supper. In 1562, the Second Helvetic Confession was published by Bullinger with a revision in 1564. This is 25, 26 years after the First Helvetic Confession. But this one was much more highly accepted because it was adopted in Switzerland in 1562, but also in Scotland in 1566, Hungary in 67, France in 71, Poland in 1578. Along with the 39 Articles of the Church of England from 1571, the Westminster Confession of Faith in 1646, the Scots Confession of 1560, and the Heidelberg Catechism of 1563, this Second Helvetic Confession is one of the core confessions of the Reformed Church throughout the world. I'm sure that Calvin would have loved to have seen this, but Calvin preached his last sermon on February 6th, 1564, and then died on May 24th of the same year in Geneva. But Calvin's influence doesn't end with his death. And of all places, it doesn't take hold in any of the other places that I named that have accepted the Helvetic Confession. In fact, it took hold in the Netherlands. Now, the Netherlands today seems to be kind of insignificant. I mean, you've got Amsterdam, and is there anything else to it? I don't know, honestly. But when we look at the Netherlands in the 1560s, they're still under the rule of Emperor Charles V as the head of the House of Habsburg. In 1568, the 80 Years' War broke out between the 17 provinces and the Spanish Empire. This is also known as the Dutch Revolution, which led to the eventual development of present-day Netherlands, Belgium, Luxembourg, and also parts of France and Germany. The Dutch Reformed Church is a Calvinistic denomination that began with a secret meeting in Antwerp in 1566. Several Protestant leaders met boldly 2 years later at the Synod of Wesel in Germany, where the Belgic Confession and the Heidelberg Confession were adopted as the core documents of this church. The first official synod of the Dutch Reformed Church met in Emden, Germany in October 1571. In 1578, the first Synod of Dort met. But when we think of the Synod of Dort, we think of the second Synod of Dort 40 years later in 1618. This is where the establishment of the Dutch Reformed Church is official. We're also 50 years into the 80 Years' War. But the canons of Dort from 1618 form the third pillar of the three forms of unity with the Belgic Confession and the Heidelberg Catechism. Let's look at these for a second. The Belgic Confession was published by Guido de Bries in 1559. The Confession was influenced by the Gallic Confession of the same year. The Heidelberg Catechism of 1563 is broken up into 52 sections, one for each Lord's Day during the year, containing 129 questions and answers. And still today, there are many Reformed churches who have their Sunday evening services every year go through whichever week of the year they are in the Heidelberg Catechism. And that forms the basis of their sermon for the evening. The Canons of Dort is divided into five articles and is seen by many to be where the TULIP acronym and understanding of the Calvinist faith comes in. But others disagree that there's no real beginning point for the TULIP acronym, which sounds kind of crazy because it's got to begin somewhere. Somebody has to come up with that idea. But, of course, in history, we can't always agree on things because the history that happens isn't always unbiased. Because, as is the old adage, history is written by the victors, so they paint it in whatever light makes them look good. But here we have Calvin and Zwingli and their influence on the Reformation really bringing into being the Dutch Reformed Church, as there's not really very many Zwinglian churches and denominations anymore. But that Dutch Reformed Church has broken up over time, and its descendants include the Christian Reformed Church, the Reformed Church in America, I believe the Orthodox Reformed Church, and a few others, as the Reformed have broken up just as much as the Lutherans have over the centuries. But I hope this gives you a little bit of insight into what's going on in Switzerland and the Netherlands, neighboring countries to the Holy Roman Empire, as we see not only that the Reformation takes hold in Germany with Luther, but there are many things going on that do constitute reasons why Luther has to write things that he does, why Melanchthon writes the way he does in some instances, and we'll see also that being an issue when we get to the Augsburg Confession, when we go through the Reformation in Germany in a few months. But come back next month as we look at the Jesuits and their counter-reformation for the Catholic Church. In June, we move across the pond to England, or I guess across the channel, from their perspective in Europe, to talk about the Church of England and the establishment there by King Henry VIII. Then in July and August, we will look at the Anabaptists, also known as the Radical Reformers, the spiritual ancestors of the Amish and the Mennonites, and then the Scottish Reformation, as the Church in Scotland does take on a different undertaking than the Church of England, as England and Scotland and Ireland are all still kind of independent at that time and not all brought together in the United Kingdom yet. So that's what's coming up this summer as we keep going through the Confessional Corner, keep going through the history, seeing the world picture around Germany before we dive deeply into our heritage in the Lutheran Reformation. So I pray that this has been insightful to you, that you have a little bit better picture of what's going on, especially when we talk about Zwingli and Calvin and Bullinger in the talks on the Book of Concord. But that it also may help you see, okay, what are some of these things? And I encourage you to read them. The Belgic Confession, the Heidelberg Catechism, the Helvetic Confessions. Sure, all of these are, I am not one to say, no, don't read that. Read it. But make sure you understand where you are first, especially when you go into something that is on the other side of the religious spectrum and the theological spectrum. That you know what you believe first, so that you may wrestle with the theology that is there, just as we wrestle with the theology that is around us every day. Amen.